Welcome to the Deadite Bites podcast. We are covering the Starz television show, Ash vs. Evil Dead. This is a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Em.
And I'm your host, Paul.
We have made it to the Bon Jovi episode. We're halfway there. God damn it. It sucks. I wish this show would just go on and on and on forever. All right, so first impressions.
It'd be a 9 Little Debbie dolls or whatever they were called.
Little Debbie, Little Lori.
Little Lori, Little Debbie. Same thing.
I hate you.
You give it a 9?
Yeah, 9, 9 and 9.5, 9 and 2 legs maybe, you know. I thought it was excellent. You know, it just keeps up at like a really good pace to where every week now I'm expecting just gore greatness. You know, it's just awesome.
I would give it a 9 as well. Possession is a subject that is dear to my heart, and this episode was full of it, and I loved it. It was kind of like chocolate and peanut butter colliding in my mouth. I give it a 9.5. It's not quite a 10 because there's a couple of things it could have been better on, but solid 9.5. I loved it, every second of it. Em?
My Lori rating is I give it a 7.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yes.
It's all right.
Well, I mean, you know, there's mixed feelings about the short runtime from a lot of viewers, and I've been okay with that up until this episode, and I feel like it would have been better served if we had more time to tell this story. It felt too rushed, a little bit too chaotic for me. But I did like Ash talking through his gag, and I like the fact there was a PJ Harvey song in it. And then Ruby intrigued me because she kind of got a little, not really menacing, but demeaning, invading Fisher's personal bubble, talking about breathing. So maybe she's more Lucretia like you guys think, not so much Xena. There's my 2 cents.
I think you're right. I don't think you're right about a 7.5 rating, but I think you're right about the... Oh, sorry, 7.
Well, I would love it if it was an hour long. I would agree wholeheartedly. An hour long would be phenomenal. Hopefully next year they do that. Because it almost feels like to me like they've made a movie and they just chopped it up into... 20-minute TV show, you know?
Well, I was reading something online where they say that it's billed as a 30-minute television show, but you actually only have 26 minutes of footage that's going on, and then when you take away the previously on section, it's down to 25. Mm-hmm. So you're actually only getting 25 minutes of new content each week. And they say, like, if you, you know, extrapolate that over the however many episodes are going on, you're getting close to an hour that's just down the rabbit hole. So that kind of sucks, but... I mean, what can you do?
I'm still okay with it. Yeah. It would just be awesome if it was like a good meaty hour, though.
It would be, but it's almost like we have a guarantee that there won't be any filler. And I like
for
that.
For sure.
I really like that because there's a lot of that goes on nowadays. A lot of fucking filler. So
yeah, but filler in this show would just be guts.
Yeah, I guess they would get artistic with the filler and make it something that we actually wanted to see. There's a positive there. All right, let's get into recap. First of all, we were doing episode 5, The Host. This one was directed by David Frazee, written by Zoe Green, and produced by the triumvirate of Tappert, Raimi, and Campbell. All right, we start the episode with Ash tied and gagged, while the still-possessed Kelly tells the Brujo all the stuff that he wants to hear about this Elagos, this demon that Ash was supposedly claiming that he was. So is it just me, or was... Kelly as the demon, or as I'll call her, Kelagos, taunting Ash a little bit here, because when nobody was looking her way, she was kind of looking at him like,
oh yeah, she was definitely doing that. And I initially thought the first time I watched this episode that Pablo was not buying. I didn't think he believed that, or he was convinced by her, and I thought he suspected her. But obviously, I was wrong, and I don't know why I'm bringing that up. But for some reason, like the words he said, they didn't sound genuine.
I could agree with that. I he didn't seem like he bought the story, you know. But then as the episode goes on, you're like, all right, well, of course he did. But I agree. There was a little bit of the way he acted it out to make you believe that.
He seemed skeptical. He really did. He was like, well, wait a minute, because he's pointing out the obvious for all of us to make the connection. He goes, don't you think we would have seen that sooner? And Kelly was the only one exhibiting any kind of strange behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really cool thing that they did to have Ash gagged, but still have him say his lines.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved it.
So you get some gems like, what a fucking bullshit story that is, while he's got something in his mouth. So the Brujo tells Pablo to get boiling water, a chicken, and his 10-inch Ginsu knife, not the bread one. That one's too expensive, and he doesn't want to ruin it, apparently. And so while he tells him to go get the knife, Ash is like, what the fuck are you going to do with that?
And I was wondering the same thing. I mean, you know, he was fairly useful when you first meet him, but he progressively got less and less useful, and especially now with the exorcism.
Well, he's like a crazy uncle.
He's really good at creating a perimeter that repels evil, with the exception of the Elegos that still got in. And mm-hmm. he did help Ash get to the answer inside him, which is the most important thing. But as far as exorcism concerned, it's like, what the hell? Did he skip that class at Hogwarts? Because
yeah.
And you know, and who brings a knife to an exorcism?
Me. And a gun.
Yeah, that's
he's
actually
like that hick uncle, you know, he's like, he's good at setting up some wards. Well, actually not that good, you know, because the demon does get through.
Right.
And he's good at mixing some drugs, which is what you would expect from a hick uncle. And then now, you know, you get to the important stuff like an exorcism. I don't think anybody in that room can do it, you know. So it fit in the character for me, because it's not like we know his background, you know. He could just be one of those paranoid guys that just kind of got into it and set it all up, you know.
The way I'm looking at this is, look at it like Rocky One. The Brujo is Mickey, the trainer, and Pablo is Rocky. He's being trained for a specific purpose to go out and do it. The Brujo used to do it, but he's over the hill. His time has passed. He's ready to go. His usefulness has been used up. And as we see in this episode, he gets literally tossed aside. Mm-hmm. So I think, and we'll get to this when it becomes, you know, relevant towards the end of the episode. But I think that Pablo is going to take his place as a Brujo, not to go live in his shack cut wife style, but like to, you know, to actually carry on his life's work.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't just bring a knife to an exorcism. You would bring like a tactical nuclear arsenal.
Yeah, and he was getting a boiled chicken too. I mean, come on. He was ready.
he has his bag of tricks that's worked in the past, but he's the kind of, if there was an exorcism to be performed, it would be one of those real mellow B-movie ones, you know, where the person is just kind of sitting in a chair and shaking like they have epilepsy or something, and he just kind of puts his hand on his head and uses the sanctified charms and whatnot and gets him out. He's not ready for this kind of thing. This is deadite business. This is way out of his league. He's out of his depth, and it shows.
Well, the only other person that there was an exorcist of, he's got the guy's head hanging on the wall. You know, so maybe that's what the knife was for. Like, well, if I can't get it out, I'll cut it out.
Yeah.
And then I'll hang you next to Uncle Steve or whatever that guy's name was.
Esteban, which is...
Steven.
Yeah, it's Steven in Spanish. So... So the Brujo intends to exorcise him with a fucking knife, as Ash says. Apparently, possessions and exorcisms can be both physical and spiritual, according to the Brujo. And when everybody else leaves, or the other two leave, Elegos/Kelly taunts Ash again, claiming that she will have his soul, basically. Lets him know, I've got your number.
Oh, yeah.
So Pablo goes back to the Airstream to find a very relaxed Kelly, who's acting quite out of character.
And the fact she keeps saying the Brujo should have tipped him off.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in a state, because he thinks Ash is possessed, because he's believing the line up until this point, or up until the shotgun almost goes off anyway. And he's pissed off at his uncle, because his uncle's treating him like a second-class citizen and be like, go get me this, go fetch me that, you know. And doesn't even, because he comes into the trailer and he's complaining about how his uncle's doing that and is not giving him any due. It's like treating him like the magician's assistant kind of thing.
Yeah, this was some good training for old Kramer Jr., because there was a lot of signs throughout the episode that he should have picked up on, you know, and hopefully from here on out he will.
Yeah, but more on that in a minute.
this scene did produce my Metal Mike quote of the week very early on in the episode. And he says, I feel like I'm the sous chef of his exorcism kitchen. Being a cook myself, I could not resist that one.
No, I don't blame you. It was up there for me.
It's a cool line anyway.
Yeah. Kelly begins a search around Ash's Airstream trailer to try to find some hooch, and she doesn't find any. She finds a man girdle and some extra large love gloves, some Magnum condoms, I guess, and she finds some weed. So, I mean, he should have been tipped off. Pablo should have known something was up. I mean, everything that's going on, and she wants to drink and smoke. I mean, mm-hmm. everybody has their own ways of handling stuff and relaxing when things get a little bit weird, but that just seems like inappropriate to time and place.
Where's the beauty inside that he supposedly sees? Because now that's completely gone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not beautiful.
Well, that's that guy that's in the friend zone seeing his opening like, sweet. So, of course, he's not going to think with his brain. He's going to think with his dick and go, okay, well, you know, hey, this is working out for me, when he should have been like, it's one of the biggest signs of all that the girl's even showing him that kind of attention, when just literally in the show's time the day before, she was like, oh, you're like a little brother. You know, it's bad Pablo.
Yep. Once you're outside of that circle, you're done. But they might bring it around in this show. Who knows? They might carry on that tension for a couple of seasons. I've always been of the opinion that when a guy pines after a girl in a show and she puts him in the friend zone, I think it's incumbent upon the writers, if that guy is a good character, to find him another love interest. Because I always feel like if she does come around eventually, he's just getting scraps.
What's going to happen is Kelly's going to sleep with Ash, and then Pablo's going to get pissed and like get the Necronomicon, and then the second season he'll be our big bad fucking Ash up. For sleeping with Kelly.
I hope not.
I sincerely hope you're wrong about that.
Oh, I know, me too, but it would work.
My little Lori ratings will plummet majorly.
So, Ruby and Fisher are following hand signs to Ash. I'm proud of that one. Come on, give me a reaction here.
Talk to the hand. For sure.
I had hand GPS in my notes.
So Fisher asks, how does possession work, and how does Ash create the Deadites? So she's way fucking off base about all of this, because he's not creating anything. I mean, he's saying words he shouldn't be saying, and he's opening gates to places he shouldn't be opening gates to, but he's not making anything happen,
mm-hmm.
per se. I mean,
well, that's what Ruby's trying to tell him, though, because she believes that, you know?
Well, Ruby doesn't answer her straight out, but rather condescends to Fisher and gives a little speech about babies breathing. And, I wanted to get you guys' opinion on this, because I thought, like Em said at the beginning of the episode, there is a hint of menace here, and she's definitely being condescending, getting all up in her personal space and the whole nine yards and stuff. But I feel like the acting between the two people really played out good, because Fisher is almost like in this tizzy. She's uncontrolled. She can't control her impatience to go get Ash, because she just wants to tear him apart, because she thinks he's responsible for the death mm-hmm. of her partner and so on and so forth. But Ruby is just kind of like, okay, calm down, child. Calm down. So,
well, Fisher's the reason why it's a 9.5 for me, this scene alone, because she just... I don't like the way they're writing her. This is another scene with her in it that I like Lucy Lawless's character a lot. I think Fisher is unnecessary. But everything except for the scene at the beginning of the beginning of the series where she's in the house, but everything else just seems unnecessary. And her character is a little annoying, okay? Because once again, you've been face to face with a demon. You've seen the Deadites on top of it. And then you're still playing the baby. It's like a teenage baby being in the car with you, when they're not writing her tough enough for me. You know, she should have a little more backbone, just a little more to her character than what we've been given.
I think a lot of people agree with you about that. I've read some things online, but I actually liked her more in this episode than I have in a while. Mm-hmm. Like the very first line of that scene, she says, "This is bullshit." And I don't know. I can see her being the everyman non-believer who's in this role, and she's fulfilling that particular person that you and I would also be when you're introduced to Deadites all of a sudden. You know, when...
Well, I'm not saying she needs to be used to it, but you've seen it. Like, I would be a mess if I was in that car. I would be a total fucking mess, wondering why the fuck I'm going to find the demons when I would be going the opposite direction. So you don't want me in the show. But it's the fact that it's just the fact that she's still in this like denial phase. It's there in front of you. Just accept it. That's my problem. It's that she's still like, this is, you know, bullshit. Well, yeah, it's bullshit. They're demons.
Well, I would, if I had any criticism to hurl at this episode, it would be the beginning of this scene, because I feel like Lucy Lawless's Ruby does an excellent job with what she does. And I don't feel like Fisher's doing a bad job per se. I don't think her acting is quite on the level of Lawless, but I mean, she's a master of her craft, so that's to be expected. But I feel like I would want a little bit more substance out of the Fisher character at this point, because I feel like she's there just as a device to get some exposition out of Ruby.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine if that's all she needs to be, but I was hoping for more from her character. So I don't know if we're going to get it and it's just coming down the pike, or if it's just going to be stalled out at that stage of the character's development. So I guess we'll see. But it was really cool that they threw in the PJ Harvey song down by the water. And when I was thinking about it last night and I was doing the recap, I was trying to read into it and see if there was anything I could glean from the lyrics, but just the little fish, big fish swimming in the water. Maybe Fisher's the little fish and Ruby's the big fish, but then it kind of ends there because I really don't have anywhere to go with that.
She is Fisher, so maybe she needs to be catching these fish, getting an idea, getting a clue.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, so, we need like more on her. We need a Fisher episode for me to start liking her. I need more.
Yeah, there's got to be an episode at some point where she gets a little bit of background.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back at the Airstream.
Is that Airstream wider on the inside than they typically are in reality?
No, they're big on the inside.
Hmm.
It feels kind of TARDIS-y to me. Because,
well, I mean, you got to have filming equipment and shit, so of course it's not filmed in one. But I've been in an Airstream before. You'd be surprised how much room you have.
So Kelligos is smoking weed out of a shotgun barrel. Looks like fun. So I don't know if you guys noticed this, but when Pablo goes to sit down, he's like, "Did you change?" Now, obviously, he's talking about her clothes, but it's kind of cool to throw that in there because you're just dropping these little hints that, you know, like when he was skeptical about her story earlier about Ash being possessed. Does he know? Doesn't he know? They're just playing with you a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's lucky Ash doesn't clean his shotgun, because usually they oil it too. So you're sitting there putting flame to it, plus the excess gunpowder.
That's what I wanted to know is that, because I don't know jack or shit about guns. Is it possible there would be traces of gunpowder in there? And would the gunpowder maybe be inert? And so it wouldn't be a problem, but it seems like Pablo would have had a bigger reaction to that. I know klaxons were going off in my head when I was like, what the fuck? Like, if I saw anybody doing that, I would slap it out of their hands.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not clean, for one thing. And you put like an oil. I don't think the oil is flammable, because that wouldn't make sense.
Right.
But you do oil your gun to keep the metal, you know, nice and clean. And then the gunpowder's not going to light, because when you fire it, it burns it all off, but you're still going to have dirt. I've cleaned a weapon before, and there's a lot of crap in it.
It's
just filthy.
Yeah, when I clean my guns, I use a oil too, and it's nothing you want to ever get around your mouth. Mm. So it's disgusting, you know.
It was still kind of hot though.
For a
you
visual...
don't like demonize, but you like the gun in the mouth.
Well, I mean, you know.
Well, that's you got to understand. One supernatural, Paul is going to freak out with the supernatural, but the gun, it's different. You know, it could be seen as sexy. So
yeah, no fully black eyes. We're not cool with that, or all white either. Regular eyeballs.
She's trying to put the moves on Pablo and get him to smoke out of the shotgun, and he's just procrastinating, and he's on this whole like, you know, nice guy over talking it routine. You know, which nice guys are prone to do. They're like, okay, now are you sure you want me to hold your hand and maybe go a little bit further? Can you sign this consent form saying that you're okay with this? And it's like, that's why you're in the friend zone in the first place, because of that attitude. You're not helping anything.
Well, I love it when she's like, get high with me. He's like, well, I get super paranoid. Maybe I can get a Mountain Dew and I can slam it and catch a quick buzz. You know, it made me laugh. I was like, damn.
It was sweet that he does not look past her forehead.
Yeah. Kissing anywhere, and that's where you want to do it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. People don't appreciate the forehead like I do.
Nobody says pussycat in seriousness these days, so he wanted to say pussy. Let's just get that out there.
Oh, for sure. Him trying to be like in there.
That's his
smooth guy.
Edgy.
Extreme sports. Okay. So the Brujo is failing miserably to goad the demon with sanctified charms. I mean, this is just really bad. Basically trying to do all the tricks in his bag and none of them are working. But it's not clicking in his mind that the reason they're not working is because there's no demon in the person in front of him. All right, so now we go. That was a quick cut scene. And then we go back to Kelagos is trying to get Pablo to smoke out of the barrel while she sneaks a shell out of her boot. What a bad girl. So this is the part that you guys had jumped to, but I hadn't got there yet. So I guess you've already said what you wanted to say about it. But he gets to kiss her anywhere he wants, and he chooses the forehead. He loves her for her mind. I thought it was pretty sweet myself.
Oh, fuck. No.
It is sweet. But no, I think her gambit with the shell was a bit complicated to pull off, even for a demon.
This whole scene was set up just to have that scene. It's like whoever wrote this episode became enamored with that idea and kind of created around it, it felt like. But I don't think it made it bad. I just feel like that's what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's only a dead-eyed demon would think of, oh, how could I kill him? There's so many things in that trailer to kill Pablo with. I'll get him to see. They're kind of sadistic. I'll get him to smoke out of a shotgun and blow his fucking brains out, you know?
And make it look like it's entertaining. Suicide.
Yeah. And nice guys kiss foreheads. Let's remember that. There's nothing sexy about that.
There is zero sex appeal to the forehead.
Just ask your mother. Yeah.
Yes. If that was sexy, then my mom's been trying to come on to me for years.
So finally, we're back at Ash and the Brujo, and he gets his gag out of his mouth. He works it out, and he's like, for God's sakes, I'm not a demon, but Kelly is. So they run over there in just enough time to see what's going on between Pablo and Kelly after, you know, she tried to actually cock the shotgun and shoot him in the mouth. So she gets tied up, and the attempts at the exorcism begin. Okay, what did you guys, before I get into the details of this scene, what did you guys think of this scene overall?
The exorcism itself?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was awesome. I super enjoyed it. There was a few moments where I was like, oh, God.
The leeches was gross.
Yes.
She coughed them up and then she was licking her teeth. That was so disgusting.
Hey, well, she like chews them too. I mean, there was a lot. It's what made the whole episode for me.
But when she coughed up that tooth, the first time I watched it, because they don't tell you what it is right away, I was like, what the fuck is that, a corn nut? It made me think of the movie Heathers. Corn nuts! You know? But then, like, later on, you know, you find out it was a tooth.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was a tooth the first time I saw it, too. I just thought she was just spitting out random stuff. But then when you see it again, it kind of becomes apparent because she's working her jaw in this way to... And the teeth that she had weren't quite as sharp. But if anybody's seen the Dario Argento movie Demons, it looked like some of his prosthetics and stuff like that were used. But I love the grotesqueness of it because that's the whole point of possession. I mean, a demon can enter into somebody's body, supposedly as it goes, and probably just kill them, you know, cut off the oxygen to their brain, stop their heart, whatever, make them jump off a cliff in front of a car, any number of ways that they could kill them. So the whole point of the possession is to make the people around them despair.
Right.
And then watch that person slowly die because they love them or care about them or whatever. So this, it becomes really effective when you've got the black eyes and the, like, the distended mouth and the gums and the teeth that are just, there's no way. Like, how the fuck did it get there? That just puts you in a different psychological frame of mind. You know, you're unnerved. So I thought they did a really good job of that. And so, Kelly spits a tooth. The worms don't work. And now we have pea soup for the soul. I thought it was cool that we got away with a couple of different exorcist touchstones, but nobody mentioned The Exorcist. They're not big about mentioning other horror movies in here, but they give definite homages and shout-outs to, and I think that's really cool. I don't know if that's something they did intentionally or the writers just don't want to tangle with, you know, lawsuits or what's going on, but I feel like they pulled that off really well.
Absolutely.
But he's, once again, just as he was trying to get a demon out of Ash that didn't exist, now he's trying to get a demon out of Kelly that is there, and he's not really any better at it.
No.
Everything he's trying is failing. It's like, for Christ's sake, somebody call Father Marin, because this is just not working.
No, I mean, he covers her with a cheesecloth dipped in holy water or something, and it's like, what's that going to do?
Apparently,
I mean, seriously, but make it even scarier.
Apparently, it's going to make her piss herself.
Yes, that was my line of the week. when Ash is like, we've all been there, you know, it's like, I pissed myself. Well,
the way Pablo reacted, it was like he got a hard-on when he saw
it. Yes. Yeah, it did look like he enjoyed it.
And that's why I think Ash said, we've all been there. Because he's gotten one before, too.
Well, I know that was a really cool scene for that reason. But I think he was referring to her like, you know, like you piss yourself because you drink too much, you know, and you just can't get to the bathroom or you can't.
Well,
get
knowing Ash, I'm sure he's had people pee on him, too, though. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
I'm sure he's pissed himself.
Yeah, yeah, he's peed on people. There's definitely water games.
You're both right here. I think he's done both. Maybe all in the same night. Who knows?
I mean, there's no telling.
So after that doesn't work, we tried the worms. We tried the holy water. None of it's working. Pablo tries the emotional route, and that fails as well because there's just really nothing that can be done. You know, you can't get through to somebody by doing that. Like, you're just shaking them like, step out of it.
Yeah, if that was going to work, it would have happened when he was being sweet to her in the fucking trailer. Yeah. You know, so it's like, what are you doing, dude?
It drove me crazy. She's sitting there bashing her head, and none of them think to get her a fucking pillow. No. Or even like a squeaky dog toy or something.
Yeah.
Just put it
Morons.
Back there. But, you know.
That would have been funny.
I mean, Chris McNeil made sure to have her whole daughter's bed padded for The Exorcist. So, you know, come on. Put something back there.
Yeah, poor girl.
And she's doing it on purpose. The demon's doing it on purpose. Yeah. And like, because she even does one looking at Ash and goes, that one's for you. Kind of like smashing her head back one more time. So the Brujo and Pablo have a heart-to-heart about the heart of the Jefe. And, you know, I feel like Pablo just kind of, he breaks down a little bit here and he feels really bad about leaving. And he's just like, I'm sorry, you know, I wish I hadn't done all this. This is my fault. And I can understand where he's coming from. He feels like, you know, people wouldn't be in this position if he had stayed at his uncle's and done what he was supposed to do, maybe left a little bit later, or, you know, and Kelly wouldn't be anywhere near Ash if it wasn't for him in the first place. So there's that. But surprisingly, the Brujo turns it around and he's kind of like, well, no, listen, you know, you're the one who saw something in this guy who you see a hero in somebody who's basically living life now as a piece of shit. So good on you, you know.
He's like, it's buried deep, 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 deep down.
Deep, so, deep down. Anyway, sorry. That made me think of a song.
So it's a good point, though. You know, it's kind of like maybe some of his training did sink in. It's kind of like Danielson, you know, like this is their moment where he's like, show me sand the floor, you know, and he starts throwing the punches at him. So he's letting Pablo know that, look, some of my training got through to you. And this is how it came out. You were able to see something in somebody that nobody else has seen. And it's borne some fruit. You know, we have a Jefe to deal with this evil. So let's just be grateful for that. And then Pablo makes a decision then and there about what he's going to do. And we'll get to that in a minute, though. So back inside, Kelligoss tries to get Ash to bust a cap into Kelly, and it almost works until this fucking idiot demon says, just make sure you put a cross on my grave. All right. This is the other point that keeps me from giving it a solid 10.
Yeah.
I understand what's going on here, but at the same time, I mean, this Elagos character is no Pazuzu, not by a mile, because if you're inside of somebody's mind and you know enough that you know enough to taunt people and to say things, you could probably figure it out inside of the cavern of the mind in there that this person that you're possessing is Jewish and not Christian.
Lazy demon.
Yeah, really lazy. Like no like Stephen High School demon. That's how lazy we're talking about here. So anyway, Ash calls bullshit on it and then walks out. Pablo valiantly tries the Father Karras route, drawing the demon out into the open. So it does work, but thankfully for him, not in the way he intended. You know, luckily there was no St. Christopher to be pulled off of his chest and go in. If you're missing what I'm talking about here and you haven't seen The Exorcist,
shame on you.
Shame on you. Stop this podcast, go watch it, then come back and press play when you're done. But it brings the demon out into the open, which I thought was a really interesting use of CGI. I don't think I've seen anything quite like that. Like a demon coming bodily out, not in a wraith-like form or smoke or anything like that. It just comes right out of Kelly's mouth, and then she just kind of lies limp.
Yeah, you first, you know, you see the impression of its hand on her chest, but of course it's like a smaller. So it's almost like on the inside, it's like inside the Airstream. Like the inside of her body must be much bigger, you know, in relation.
She's anyway. Packing a TARDIS.
She swallowed the TARDIS. Yeah, it's it was pretty gnarly when it climbed out. I was kind of hoping she was going to die. And just the fact that, you know, when it climbs out, her head just pops open. But it didn't happen. That's all right, though. I like Kelly.
Well, I was wondering why, because, like, Ash was not wanting to shoot, because obviously, like, she would be in the line of sight. But couldn't he just, like, walked around to the side and shot the demon? But then I thought about it, and I was like, ooh, that would suck to have the demon blow up in your mouth, you know, because that would happen.
Halfway out, yeah.
And it'd probably kill her. Ew. And if it didn't kill her, that would suck.
She's sitting there choking on half a demon.
Yeah.
like, yeah, because now the demon's dead, but she can't breathe because there's a demon all in her throat, all up in her shit.
Well, when they shoot him, he popped like a balloon, so maybe it would just like...
Hopefully. Maybe. Yeah.
But still, she'd be swallowing a lot of that.
So this thing starts to wreak its havoc and do what it does and disappear and reappear and be all shifty with its frenetic energy. And unfortunately, the Brujo is killed in this scene, which I thought was kind of sad. But he went out pretty cool, though.
Yeah, well, not too sad. I mean, he wasn't very useful. You know, if he had done a better job, he would have lived.
So Ash digs deep from some spiritual guidance from himself, apparently. Shoot first, think never. That was from last episode, technically, but that was a close runner-up for my Metal Mike quote of the week. So he busts a sweet chainsaw fake cut and follows it up with a blast to the face. Eat your heart out, Blatty. That's how you perform an exorcism, right there.
Oh, yeah.
And that's William Peter Blatty for the kids.
Everyone knows that. Don't pretend that people don't know that. Kelly seems to be okay, which seems to be an exorcism trope that I've noticed over the years in movies, and they kind of follow along with it because it becomes convenient for the story writers. You know, once the invading demon is gone, you're just left with kind of superficial wounds to the body, because if you were to try to survive all of the stuff that the demon actually does to the human body while it's possessing, there's no way. You know, maybe in this show, but in some of the movies you've seen, it just wouldn't happen. So I guess I understand why it's there. They end up lighting a funeral pyre for the Brujo, and Pablo gives just his little bit of an elegy, I guess, and he says, "He always tried to tell me I should have listened sooner." All right, so let's have a moment of silence for the Brujo. Okay, that's enough. So the Brujo drops Pablo an amulet, and of course he tries to pick it up because he's half dumbass. So he tries to pick this. All right, 65%.
And be nice to Pablo.
Yeah, and this thing is hot as hell. I don't know if it dropped out of the funeral pyre or if it
didn't it launch out of it.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Like.
All right. Well, I watched it three times. I guess I didn't. Still, I was focused on him more than anything else, so I guess I didn't notice it. But as he's walking away from the pyre and everything, and, you know, he says that he laments that he's like, I'm sorry for everything that I did wrong, and I wish you could come with us, wish you were still alive to come with us and help us fight this evil. And they exchange some words in Spanish. I don't know Spanish, so I don't know what they said. But as Pablo's walking down, all the things start lighting up, all the totems that the Brujo had up, and I think that he's transferred his power to him. That's the impression I'm getting out of this.
No, I totally agree. So he's a new Brujo for sure.
So which now we know what Pablo is going to bring to the group besides technical expertise. Mm-hmm. So now hopefully Kelly's power is going to become evident too soon.
Well, we got the second backstory. So now we're really starting to see people fit into the group. So
Ash makes sure that Kelly is okay and that she's ready to travel and, you know, her head is firmly on her shoulders and not spinning around.
Let alone it's probably still bleeding from the back, but nobody still seems to give a shit. Oh, I've got a headache. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he's not very forthcoming about what she did while she was possessed. He said, oh, you know, you spit a few teeth, but they were wisdom teeth. You're going to lose them anyway. And then
How does he know? He didn't even check.
I think he just...
She did not seem worried. She's like, whatever.
He's making light of the situation. And then he's like, look, there's some dentures over there if you need them. You know, so just, she's like, okay.
I would have been up looking in the mirror. What teeth am I missing? I would not have been cavalier about that at all.
No.
So aside from all of the stuff that usually makes Ash versus Evil Dead episode so great, this last little bit of the episode is what really put it over the top for me. because Ash gets up and he's completely serious, and he apologizes to Pablo and Kelly for the positions they're in. And it's completely heartfelt. There's no snark. There's no smartass. There's no posturing. And Bruce Campbell just delivers that line just dead straight, and I loved it. And it really gave this show like a center and a heart for me.
Yeah.
This group is now like completely bonded together, I think. So there shouldn't be any more talk about somebody not going with them or anything like this. I think they're the three amigos now, and they need to forge ahead. And I really like that scene. I really like Kelly's quote as well, because, you know, Pablo's trying to be, he's like, oh no, Ash isn't responsible, because Ash is all like, I feel like this is my fault. I don't know how to make it better, and I feel bad about that. He's like, oh, it's not your fault. Kind of like rolling his eyes, and Kelly's like, oh no, no, he's totally responsible. Like 100%, probably more. So there's a little banter about Pablo liking Kelly better when she was, or after Ash says he liked Kelly better when she was possessed, Pablo says the same thing. And I think this was a nice and unexpected twist, because I think in the hands of a lesser writer, we would have had a little bit of Pablo feeling sad about the fact that it was only the demon messing with him, and it wasn't really Kelly. He was just kind of like, I liked you better when you were possessed. I almost got some. So it's keeping in line with the show, and it's not, they're giving
you the
things.
Well, they're a family
now. Yeah. Yeah, that's true too. Yeah. So Pablo gives Ash his new bionic hand, and they have a three-way fist bump. three-way fist bump.
The gadget hand is awesome.
So it moves slowly. Like, it took a while for that fist to form.
Well, he's
that might
first
be a problem.
Time,
yeah, he's getting used to it. He's thinking about the like you said, the beer that's going to be double fisted.
Yeah.
In that hand.
We're gonna see him doing that opening next episode.
And you know we're gonna get some Goonie Data references where he's like, "Oh, use the flashlight," and it's like, and it doesn't work or something.
Oh, slick shoes,
slick palm. Maybe not in front of everybody.
Yeah, well, that's the first thing he's gonna do with that new hand. When it, you know, all right, you guys get up in the car. Like when you see them driving away. That's why you get the song "Stranglehold" by Ted Nugent at the end, the Motor City Madman.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's what's going on.
Yeah. He's trying out the new hand.
That's the end of this episode, and we are halfway through this amazing series. I'm still in a little bit of stage of unreality that I'm watching this. You know, it still hasn't quite sunk in. Hopefully, it will before we get to the end of it. But I just dreamed of something like this for so long.
It would be awesome if at the end, if somebody took all of them together and took the credits off. And smashed them all together to where you can sit down for like 2-3 hours and watch the whole thing front to back.
Yeah, that'd be great with their DVD release if they do that.
Mm-hmm. It'd be badass.
Oh, just play like there's play as movie.
Yeah.
And it just goes all the way through.
Oh, it'd be wonderful.
That'd be the first of its kind if they did that, wouldn't it?
It'd be genius. Yeah, it'd be the first of its kind. It'd be genius. It'd just be awesome. Because it picks up each episode exactly where the other one left off. So it would be perfect.
Huh.
Because it's not like there's nothing that's going on between these episodes that we're not privy to. There's characters that we don't see, and we don't know what they're doing while the other characters are on screen, like Fisher and Ruby, you know. But like you said, it just goes straight into the action from one thing to the next. So it's not like 3 days later. Well, they might do that at some point. I don't know. Maybe they pick up a few days down the road in the next episode because they had them driving. Who knows, though? So
yeah. Well, even if they did, it'd still work.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it would still be seamless, and it would be fun to watch it that way.
So okay, so now we're moving into feedback. Before we go into feedback, we like to ask those of you who have not done so yet, please head over to iTunes and write us a review. It helps us get some traffic. It lets people know what to expect when they're checking out the Ash vs. Evil Dead podcast. Let them know what you think, and let them know if they should or should not check us out.
Yeah, and it'll move us up on the rankings, so when you type in Evil Dead, it puts us up there to where everybody can see us.
First off, we're going to read two emails from John Bernardi. His first one is about the last episode, which was called, Brujo. Hi, I'm Steve and Paul. So that demons possessed Kelly. I knew that thing wasn't done with the crew. I just wasn't expecting possession for how it came back into the story. The demon in the mirror looking back at Kelly didn't scare me, but it made me think of a few times in my life, so it kind of took me out of the show. But that's a personal issue rather than the show's shortcoming.
Whoa.
Well, I mean, it could be from like LSD or something, you know, no pupils. I could totally understand that.
I don't know if I should like be like, man, my heart goes out to you, or to be like, wow, I hope you're okay, or to be like, that's awesome. I don't know what the proper response to that is. It could be so many different things.
Was it Bob?
Yeah, I was going to say, did you see Bob?
I still hope the demon's going to be obligated to tell Ash how to unsummon the evil he's unleashed based on their verbal agreement before Ash broke the seal on the circle last episode. But I'm resigned to thinking the quest has been revealed in Ash's trip later on, rendering my pet theory moot.
That's a good point, but yeah, I think we got all that in his Hiawatha trip.
I love the dust cloud chasing the team on the way to Pablo's uncle's house. Is that rolling cloud of evil from the previous movies, or is that a new touch?
The actual visualization of it is a new touch. For us as the viewer to be able to see it is new to this series, but it's still the rolling cloud that was in all of the previous films. We just knew where it was going and who it was going towards, and then we would see their reaction to it.
Right.
So it's almost like we were traveling as the cloud in the movies, and now we get to see it as what it appears to the characters as.
Pablo's uncle is a pretty great character. I hope he gets to live through the end of at least next episode. The bookstore guy, who is now a deadite, seemed like a weasel from minute one, so I don't miss him, but I would miss Pablo's uncle already. Let's hope he figures out Kelly's possessed early enough that he's able to defend himself from everything Ash dragged him in with him. I love Ash's spiritual trip, by the way. It seems like maybe he has a chance to break through the easy, low-stakes life and become a little proactive, but I don't think he'll ever do it willingly. I like that the quest is introduced, burying the book deep underneath the original cabin. I suspect the last three or four episodes will happen there, making you all longtime fans need to change your pants. It's so awesome and it goes full circle kind of way. And that power glove hand that Ash will inevitably have, that made me geek out just thinking about it. What would make me so happy is if his new hand works about as well and accurately as the power glove did as a Nintendo controller. The thing looks badass, but it is notoriously janky. It's the wrong generation for Ash, but otherwise seems like a kindred spirit. I know you're probably done recording this episode's podcast as I'm typing, but I'm the type of guy who's sending it anyway. Take care, John.
Well, thanks for sending it, and it's kind of cool that he's like, well, I hope he survives to the next episode, because, well, if he was a better exorcist, well, he would be fine and be able to live, but he
got his
comeuppance. No.
Well, let's hear what John has to say about this current episode now. Hi, I'm Stephen Paul. I love this new episode just like all the rest. So many great things to digest as the momentum keeps every episode feeling like you get an hour's worth of material in 15 minutes time. While Ruby's car was announced with classical music a few episodes ago on Ruby's way to the bookstore, it was great to see her and the officer driving to PJ Harvey's down by the water, a great underplayed classic that deserves a new audience to find it. I love that they didn't string us along for very long with everyone thinking Ash was demon host, since we viewers already knew it was a mistaken identity thing. Though I wish Pablo had figured out on his own Kelly was possessed instead of the demon just growing impatient with him to go with the flow. However, as a once fellow member of the Think So Much We Cock Block Ourselves Club, I can see why he missed the signs, because he was still too busy trying to wait exclusively for the exactly perfect scenario to finally make a move on the girl of his dreams, even when she's panting all over him and saying yes 1,000 different ways. But at least Pablo redeems himself by the final third of the episode and grows up some, at least professionally. That conversation he had with his uncle right before the final battle was the passing of the torch in proper fashion, so I can't even complain that his uncle's gone too soon as a character. Also, the funeral pyre was a great scene, cheesy Western music and all. And when they had his uncle's voice Obi-Waning through the locket to Pablo, I thought for sure he was in that piece of wood on the ground. Would have made for an interesting road trip that way. I imagine he'd have been endangered as a shield or at least twice. But I have to say, it's much more badass the way all the heads and masks on the post catch fire, as Pablo has accepted his true calling once and for all, so I forgot all about what could have been. Halfway in, the show still displays nothing but economic, character-driven, organic change happening within all of our characters each episode. And the plot feels like it has an effortless propulsion as we keep firing the nitrous through the season. Again, the episode sticks to one location for the main team and no more than two quick scenes away from them. I think this show could be taught in film school for how to use quick bursts of story like bullets and how to aim them for proper impact. Wow. I hope everybody loaded up properly on their turkey and had a nice time with friends and family this long Thanksgiving weekend. Take care, and if I'm lucky to see you next week, John.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot. That was a great letter, and that's a really good way to put that. That's high praise for the show to say that it could be shown in film schools, like, because it's exacting. John's commented before about the economy of how this is done, and I'm not a film critic to any extent, so he kind of brought that to my mind, and that's why I'm thinking about it's not just the time that's it's not just the time limit that they have to work within that makes them economical. It's all of the things that they're doing is making them economical, and it just really works to the betterment of the show. There is no filler. It's just go, go, go. So yeah, we probably would have liked to see a little bit more time with the Brujo, but it just wasn't in the cards, and now they're moving on to bigger, better, and newer things. But I'm glad to see that you are also in the overthinking things to where you cock block yourself club, because I think every guy's been in that. Unless you're just unless you're just graced with, like, you know, the looks of a movie star, I think every guy at some point in his life goes through a phase like that.
Girls go through that too, not just guys.
Oh yeah. Wait, it's a human thing.
Exactly.
Wait, hold on, hold on. Wait, what is this bullshit you're talking about now? Girls do the same thing. No.
Yeah. There's unrequited love for girls too. Come on.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, there is, but I mean, it's the dynamic is different. It's hard. It's a lot harder for a girl to get into the friend zone and stay there for a guy, because we're just, especially as teenagers, because we're just such horn dogs. You know what I mean? So it's not.
Yeah, but it still
happens.
It's not
about sex
though.
For the girls. They want to be boyfriend girlfriend. So it's a different thing. It's a different thing. I mean, there's a whole music industry that thrives on unrequited love, especially from the females. So yeah, it definitely happens.
See, if you listen to more Taylor Swift, you would understand this.
Exactly.
God.
Well, hey, there's relevance here, because Pablo was going to play her a Taylor Swift song to get the mood set. Remember that?
Really?
Yeah. Yes. She's just like that. No, shut up. Just smoke out of the barrel.
Oh my God. Well, I can't wait till we see Pablo have to do, like, something that his uncle taught him, and it's something ridiculous. I mean, they set Pablo up for a really comedic part, I think, you know, and of course it'll come through towards the end episodes to where he's got to do something that maybe will help close the book or save them, but I cannot wait to see Pablo the Brujo.
Pablujo.
Final piece of feedback is from Castle Grayskull. Hi guys, Castle Grayskull here. I can't believe we are at the midway point of the season already. It's crazy how quick it's gone and how long we have to wait for season 2 to roll around. At least we have Vikings to tide us over.
That's awesome. Somebody likes this show so much that they're looking at Vikings as just a way to tide them over until, you know, because I would say that the vast majority of people who listen to us are like, this is tiding them over perhaps
for
until
Vikings.
They get to Vikings, you know.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Grayskull's flipping the script, and I appreciate it.
The cool thing as well is I checked IMDb, and there's going to be an episode on Boxing Day. Thought they might have missed it for that week. Wonder if they will mention Christmas in the show. Anyways, let's get down to business. Thought the start of the show was a little slow this week. The hand sat nav is an ingenious way for Ruby to find Ash. Just a quick thought. In the second episode, Fisher saw a deadite hand pointing to the business card of the bookshop. Could it be that Ruby went there with the purpose of getting Fisher to follow along with her with a clue to where Ash was going, and then by saving her life in the bookshop from the deadite clerk? That's actually interesting speculation.
Wow. That had never even occurred to me. So the hand that was pointing to the bookshop could have been Ash's hand, and it was put there on purpose to do that. Like,
it's possible.
Like, she has some sort of relationship with this hand and was like, look, I need you to point to this because we're going to get more help to go get your master or your owner, your previous owner.
But what I want to know is why does she not think it was bullshit then when the hand was pointing at the card, but she's thinking it's bullshit now?
Exactly my point. It's like she just spinning her freaking wheels all the time. She just need, if you're going to be a badass, be a badass. Don't be a dumbass badass.
So her character's lacking a little bit of consistency, kind of like what we talked about earlier. Yeah. But as to Grayskull's point, I could totally see that. That went over my head the first time, but that's a really cool idea. I don't know if it's true. It's definitely plausible. I mean, what do you guys think? That would be fucking cool.
Oh, yeah.
Because Ruby has a vested interest in keeping Fisher a little bit in the dark on this because she wants that ire and anger towards Ash to stay kindled. She doesn't want her to know the truth, obviously, because she may not even know the truth herself. Her character's still such a question mark. It's really enticing, though, that we haven't had everything spelled out for us at this point.
Yeah, we're gonna have to get more on Ruby and them. And then I think the chicken bone knife's going to be a key to whatever they have to do at the cabin, so they're going to have to all come together and possibly work together.
So the last couple of episodes could be like just a Most Everybody Lives replay of the first or second movie.
It'd be so sweet.
That's, you know, they could be saving up their CGI budget for that. Hopefully
Evil
they...
Dead Royal Rumble.
Man, I cannot wait. That's going to be some good television.
So Castle Grayskull goes on to say, the boomstick bong was proper funny. And I thought Pablo knew that Kelly was off, and that's why he threw out the false sentence about the first time he wanted to kiss her. I'm still thinking Pablo is shifty, maybe even working with Ruby. No.
See, your idea about the hand, you know, is really, to me, it sounds spot on, but I can't buy into Pablo being shifty. I don't think kid has a shifty bone in his body. Yeah, he has no idea who Ruby is. Now, if we just get, like, blindsided by them working together, I'll eat my words, but...
Well, he says, I just got a hunch. I really hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, that'd be a Shyamalan twist.
Metal Mike quote of the week has got to be, when you get back to hell, work on your aim. Said by Ash to tied up puking Kelly demon, who was hot when she had them black eyes and normal teeth. Yeah, the normal teeth and the black eyes, yes.
No. No. I'm going to get the contacts, and I'm going to show up at y'all's house. I'm going to, like, knock on the windows and just kind of stare, and we'll see. We'll see. Yeah.
You have to be Kelly.
So this only works for Kelly.
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
I'll cancel that shit, man.
So he goes on to say, the killing of the demon was really awesome. Love the whole side of the barrel camera angle with the flames looking out in slow-mo. The Brujo mantle and power seems to have been passed down to Pablo, which I'm still thinking was his plan, the shifty git.
He calls him a shifty git?
Yes.
Yeah.
And what was the deal with all the wood sculptures setting fire as he was walking past them? I think it's like John Bernardi said, the torch was being passed on, and Steve had, you know, alluded to that as well. He's now got the Brujo powers.
I just have to interject here and say that when Castle Grayskull uses all these British terms, I picture, or I hear the voice in my head of James Marsters playing Spike on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That's how I hear you when you say this stuff, like git and stuff like that.
Even though he's American playing British.
But he does it such a good job. He does such a good job.
Let's ask a British person.
Grayskull, give us some feedback on that. If you've ever seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer, how does Spike and Drusilla, who both employ British accents, which are in fact fake because they're American actors, how do they sound to a Brit?
Was it Pablo's inner Brujo power turning on, or the Brujo uncle power dying and it becoming a normal place again? Ash is, so he's commenting on the wood sculpture setting fire.
Yeah, I think it's just the power itself is in the air.
I'm passing
on. From the transfer, yeah.
Ash's power hand was an awesome and welcome comeback. But what about the chainsaw? Hopefully it won't be put to one side in favor of the power glove. Yeah.
He can hold the chainsaw like a person now.
Yeah, I thought about that, and that's what I came up with as well. I don't think he has to give up one for the other, because now he can just have a little bit more. He won't be one with it like he used to, but he can hold it like a regular person, and if it gets dropped, he's still two-fisted. Yeah. So that's...
Or if the hand gets pulled off, I mean, he's never going to give the chainsaw up. That's Ash.
And I think this is a harbinger of a lot more action to come, because they're setting it up to where, because what he says that we didn't really cover inside the podcast proper is, he says, first thing I'm going to do is shove this right up some deadite's ass. So he's ready to rumble. So I think there's going to be a lot more action.
Oh, yeah.
Castle Grayskull says, so I'm guessing they are off to the cabin now, which is going to be awesome. So I've watched the promo for next week's episode. I won't say anything as I'm not sure if you are watching them or not because of spoilers. I'd rate this episode probably about 7.5. Okay, that's my thoughts this week. Great show as always, guys. Keep up the good work, and I'm looking forward to Vikings coming back. Castle Grayskull out.
Awesome letter.
Thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you, Castle Grayskull.
Yep, all going written down in the book for points, so we're good.
And I know there's more of you out there who are listening, and don't be intimidated. Join the club. Everybody is welcome. You will probably get a nickname. You'll probably, you know, be in on the jokes and stuff like that. It's just, don't, what I'm saying is, don't be intimidated to write in and give us some feedback. Don't be intimidated to write in to the Gmail and put your 2 cents in on what you think is going to happen and what you thought about what did happen.
And our website's www.noship.net.
Who's going to die? You know they're going to kill someone. Who's going to die, guys? It's halfway through the season. It's when I usually bring it up. The end of the episode.
I don't know if anybody's going to die. I don't know if I
come on
that anybody's going to die.
In the movies, everybody dies but Ash. So let's give one person, if you had to pick, you got them all lined up. Some terrorists have your families, and somebody in that show's got to die in the show. Who do you pick?
Fisher.
Maybe all of them.
Oh, going for the clean sweep.
All of them except Ash.
All of them except Ash. Hey, then your feelings don't get hurt. It's perfect. I would probably
new slate next season.
Yeah, then you're really, really banking on some good writing to make it believable that Ash cobbles together some more
another crew
that's going to put up with his bullshit. You know, you remember King Midas? Everything that he touches turns to gold. Ash is like the inverse of that. Everything that he touches turns to shit. So he's got this confluence of events where he's got two people who are going to be loyal to him, you know, and be able to go and help him on this quest. If he had to start over, the chances of him finding one more person seem just astronomical.
I think instead of somebody dying, that possibly somebody gets taken like an army of darkness. You know, they like kind of like they did this week with the possession. Maybe they fully take someone Deadite style this time, though. You know, we don't have the Deadite champion yet. The big bad Deadite.
I think they're going to make that happen at the cabin. And if they don't have one single entity that fulfills that spot, I think it'll happen in season two. It'll be like an early thing in season two, and it'll, you know, we'll follow like parallel storylines until they converge.
Mm. Nice.
That's my speculation.
It might be Ruby.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, she is badass.
No, she might be the one that dies.
Oh, no. They won't kill Ruby. No. She stays. If you're going to kill someone, kill Kelly.
Yeah, I could see Kelly going, too. No. Because you've got Pablo as the sidekick thing, and then Kelly would pull at everybody's heartstrings by dying because you think she's going to be part of this group forever. But they could do that with Pablo just as easy, too. But if you've got an acting talent in the form of Lucy Lawless, you're going to keep her as long as she wants to keep signing on.
Yeah, and her husband's freaking tapered. I mean, come on. Yeah. Come on. She's not going to die till at least second season.
Yeah. The only reason they didn't keep her around longer in Spartacus, I'm sure, I don't know this, but speculation here, is because they moved the story so far away from the Ludus and Capua that they just couldn't make it feasible anymore. So they just had to get rid of her.
And what a glorious ending she had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the best episodes in that show.
Yeah, that was a really good episode.
When you jump off of a, like backwards like that off of a cliff, they call it the babysitter. you have to watch Spartacus to get that and listen to our podcast, because I wish I would have said that at the appropriate time 3 years ago in that podcast, but I didn't.
We do have other podcasts besides Spartacus.
Do we? Well, this is just what's going on this season. That's all.
We do have other better podcasts besides what we did on Spartacus.
Well, I don't know about better, but it's good.
But it's going to get referenced a lot because of Lucy Lawless.
Yeah, so. It is.
Thanks for listening to this week's installation of Deadite Bites. We will see you again, same Deadite time, same Deadite channel. I am your host, Steve.
I am your host, Em.
And I'm your host, Paul.
Sleep tight. Don't let the Deadites bite.
Perfect.
I went for my podcast host voice.
Very good.
How did it work?
Yes, quite professional.
Yeah.